It's Friday, December 9th, and Brittany Griner's Coming Home. We start here. Russia's most high-profile American prisoner is exchanged for an infamous arms dealer.
And we learned that it was a one-for-one swap. It was Victor Boot for Brittany Griner.
But why was Griner the only one included in this swap? North Carolina power stations were shot at, and they weren't the only ones.
This raises concerns we might have domestic violent extremists intentionally targeting the power grid.
A counterterrorism expert describes who may be behind this. And if you get something wrong here, there's no cushion.
It's led to this business of illegal butt injections.
There's a growing black market for butt lifts, and police say it's turning deadly. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. In recent years, this weird trend has evolved with Russia. The U.S. makes a high-profile bust on a Russian target. Might be an arrest, might be shutting down a building the U.S. thinks is used by Russian spies, maybe the U.S. expels diplomats. Russia then responds by arresting U.S. citizens in Russia and trading back for their people. We saw this recently with Marine Trevor Reed. There's another U.S. Marine named Paul Whelan who's been sitting in Russia waiting for his release for years. But earlier this year, right as Russia was getting ready to invade Ukraine, Russian police arrested an American sports icon.
I had no intent on breaking any Russian laws.
Brittany Griner is unlike any of these prior arrests. She's a 6'9" WNBA superstar. She's black, she's openly gay, she can dunk, and she was arrested for allegedly carrying some cannabis oil at the airport.
I made an honest mistake, and I hope that in your ruling that it doesn't end my life here.
She was recently sent to a penal colony to carry out a years-long sentence there. Well, yesterday, American and Russian officials announced Brittany Griner is coming home.
This is a day we've worked toward for a long time. We never stopped pushing for her release.
But once again, it's in exchange for someone way more notorious than her, and the whole process is raising some prickly questions. ABC's Patrick Reeval has been based in Moscow for years. He's followed these cases and all these arrests so closely. He joins us from London now. Patrick, were there signs that this was happening all so suddenly?
Hey, Brad. Yeah, I mean, I think there were some signs that something was moving in the last few weeks. But ultimately, and this is the case with the other prisoner swaps that we've seen, it just suddenly happens very, very quickly.
Do you know where I'm heading to?
No.
No?
No.
No, no. No. You fly back home.
To the U.S.
To the U.S.
Okay.
And within a matter of hours, we know ultimately that this, we're hearing from the White House that this ultimately came together in about 48 hours.
Negotiations are always difficult. There are never any guarantees.
I mean, which is, of course, incredible because these negotiations and this terrible saga has been going on for Brittany Griner for months and for Paul Whelan for years now. But ultimately, once the decision is made, it happens extremely quickly. And we learned that it was a one-for-one swap. It was Victor Boot for Brittany Griner.
Are you ready for a flight?
Yes.
Yes.
And then eventually, later on, we see the moment of the swap. We see from Russian television the moment that Brittany Griner and Victor Boot are walking across the tarmac in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates and are walking to members of both countries' security forces who are waiting there to meet them. You know, Victor Boot shakes hands and embraces the two Russian officers who are waiting for him there. Brittany Griner seems to look at him, and then she is met by officials on the tarmac. And then that's it. They're on the planes, and they are headed home.
And today is just a happy day for me and my family, so I'm going to smile right now.
Brittany Griner is home after months and months held in grim conditions in Russia. And for Victor Boot, it's going home after 12 years held in the United States and with many more years on his sentence and wondering whether he would actually ever get home, I think.
Yeah, what is the deal with this Victor Boot? Because this is a guy, he's not being held on marijuana charges. Like, he's a notorious arms trafficker, right?
Yeah, no, Victor Boot is very much not being held on a misdemeanor. Victor Boot is arguably the most notorious arms dealer in the world. And frankly, when you speak to experts, when Victor Boot was active, he was the most notorious and, more importantly, the biggest arms trafficker in the world. He was running basically a fleet of Soviet-era cargo transports that were moving weapons all over the world, but particularly into Africa. And he could supply almost anything any warlord would want. I mean, that would range from huge amounts of ammunition and small arms right up to tanks and helicopters. and he is accused of fueling some of the bloodiest conflicts in Africa in the 1990s and early 2000s. He's accused of having the blood of tens of thousands of people probably on his hands from doing that. And that is why the United States spent so long trying to first disrupt his operations, then ultimately capture him. But of course, that ultimately was a long time ago. He's been in prison for 12 years in the United States, and his value to Russian intelligence, the assumption is that it will have more or less expired at this point. You know, he's been in prison for so long that there is very little value that he could provide now. But still, he is a major, major criminal figure. And that was why it was such a difficult decision for the U.S. to make in terms of this swap. I mean, we're seeing from the former DEA agents who arrested him, we're hearing from them that they are very angry that he is being traded.
Well, that's the thing, Patrick, because Brittany Grant, like, I'm sure her family's thrilled. It's obviously kind of complicated for people like you spoke to there in the DEA, but we haven't gotten back all the detained Americans there, right? So I got to imagine people are wondering, where is Paul Whelan, the former Marine? Like, he was there longer than her. And I, you know, I'm sure some people think first guy in should be the first guy out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Paul Whelan has been there almost 4 years. And when I heard that the swap was taking place and that Brittany Griner was coming home, you know, my immediate second thought was, is Paul Whelan coming home? And when I learned that he wasn't, I have to admit it was pretty heartbreaking, because I've spoken at length to both Paul, but to his family as well. And I know how difficult it is for them. And this is actually not the first time, you know. He was already left behind in the last prisoner swap that freed Trevor Reed.
Right.
And so this is just a huge blow to his family.
It's disappointing in that sense that we don't really have any clear way to get Paul home.
I think his family released an extraordinary and very generous statement saying how happy they are, and I totally believe them, how happy they are that Brittany Griner is home, but also what a huge blow this is to them and to Paul that he is not. And, you know, that they ask, how can you go on when, you know, for the second time, the U.S. government hasn't been able to bring Paul Whelan home?
What's the answer to that, Patrick? Like, why is that?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think the first answer is that ultimately Russia insists on this idea of reciprocity.
The Russians were not willing to negotiate in good faith for the release of Paul Whelan at this time.
And so we know the U.S. government put forward an idea of trading Victor Boot, who is a very big figure, for both Whelan and Griner. But we know that the Russians rejected it. The Russians are not only asking for Victor Boot. We know they've been asking for other people who are accused of very, very serious crimes and who ultimately could pose a threat if they're released. And so this is a very, very difficult thing for the U.S. ultimately to do.
They continue to insist on sham charges of espionage and are treating Paul's case differently.
But I think equally, there's a very big question. Why, if they were able to release Victor Boot now, if they were able to make that difficult decision, why weren't they able to do it, you know, 2 years ago when we know the Russians were hinting they wanted it for Paul Whelan? And would he already be home? And maybe,
like, before you had to choose between Griner and Whelan, you could have just chosen Whelan.
That's ultimately the very difficult question behind it. And is the answer in some way because Brittany Griner is so much more famous, and because of that there was so much more pressure on the Biden administration to do it, and also because it's such, you know, such a big win ultimately for the Biden administration, was that the reason why it was easier for them to make this trade now, even though of course ultimately Paul Whelan has been there longer and really urgently needs to be rescued from there?
Yeah, and President Biden basically said out loud that Paul Whelan, a former Marine, somebody who's being held on what he would say are trumped-up espionage charges, that he's essentially got a different value as a hostage to Russia at this point. So right now you got this one-for-one swap. Patrick Revo, great reporting as always. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, anyone could be shooting at these power stations, but experts say it's straight out of the white supremacist playbook. We'll explain on the other side of the break.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
You remember that apparent attack on those power substations in North Carolina last week? The good news is, the power there in that part of the state is back on. The bad news, though, is that in recent days, a couple of other power substations in different states have also reportedly come under attack.
And we have confirmed that this was malicious intent, this was no accident.
Let's bring in Elizabeth Newman. She's the former Assistant Secretary for Counterterrorism at the Department of Homeland Security. She's now an ABC News contributor. Elizabeth, what do we know about these other outages?
Right. Brad, we had one in Ridgeway, South Carolina, just the other day.
The sheriff in Kershaw County tells local media that Duke Energy crews witnessed a person shooting from a vehicle near a power plant, then speeding off.
We had another incident in Portland that we're learning about. And there have been a number of utility companies that are reaching out to federal authorities in recent days to tell us about recent or past instances of sabotage.
Quote, "We are actively cooperating with the FBI and cannot at this time share many details about this incident."
All of those are being reviewed. We don't know whether what happened in South Carolina and North Carolina are related. Mm. It could be a copycat type of attack. Mm-hmm. But here we are 6 days after what happened in North Carolina, and at least publicly law enforcement is not indicating that they know who they're looking for.
Authorities are now offering a $75,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of the person or persons responsible for the attack.
And that tells me we're dealing with some individuals that have some level of sophistication. More broadly, this raises concerns we might have domestic violent extremists intentionally targeting the power grid.
Yeah, why that? I've heard this concern raised by a few people about sort of domestic terrorist right-wing extremists. Why is the specific concern about that?
So for decades, we've had the white power movement and militias view power and water as really important targets. This is a part of their mythology, their playbook, a narrative, if you will, that if we can take out the power grid, then we'll create civil unrest in the population, create that chaos, and that's how we're going to be able to get us to a civil war. Mm. So in their ideology, the goal is a civil war so they can overturn whatever the current authorities are and institute the type of government that they think is needed. So if you're a white power movement person, you want a white government, a white nation state. If you're anti-government in nature, like a militia, you might just believe that the current U.S. government is no longer abiding by its constitutional responsibilities, and you want to go back to the basics of the American Constitution. So the end goal might look different, but they both follow this same playbook of we need to have civil unrest so that we can then get to civil war to overthrow the U.S. government.
Wait, like the plan is to go to a power station and like put a part of the country into darkness for a couple days, and like that's the start of everything?
Yes, I'm not saying that they're super smart, but they might see this as the start of something. It's winter, right? Like it is rather a big deal to go without power for 5 days.
Oh, right.
People die right. If they don't have their medical equipment working. Or if they are plunged into darkness and cold for days on end. So you can see that if this were to happen in more than one location, we may end up with society being very upset. And you can understand the concept of unrest. But yes, I do think it's a little far-fetched that that would be the thing that leads us to some form of civil war. So right. I'm not saying that their ideology makes sense, but that is kind of the theory behind it.
And then lastly, just so I'm clear, like it could still be possible, right, that this is like in some of these places, like a drunk guy with a rifle one night, right, or like even like a foreign saboteur. I mean, how locked in are experts like yourself that like, oh, this is probably right-wing extremism?
I will tell you that on Saturday night when the word came out about North Carolina, there were a number of us that had our eyebrows raised, but, you know, waiting to see more about the investigation. As time goes by and less We haven't had those suspects named or, you know, be on the lookout for us come out publicly. You do start to lean towards the more sophisticated actors, people with military backgrounds, or potentially, foreign adversary is definitely a possibility. However, when you see it happening in different parts of the country, militia networks do talk to each other online. The white power movement talks to each other online. Is it a copycat? Potentially, is it just a lone actor? That is also entirely possible. It's just a little suspect that we're seeing a number of these incidents all around the same time. And that's why I think you see the FBI involved, ATF involved, and a number of, you know, law enforcement agencies really taking these threats seriously.
Yeah, and again, a lot that's unknown, but noteworthy, I think, that so many people in counterterrorism circles are kind of raising their eyebrows right now. All right, Elizabeth Newman, formerly of DHS, now an ABC News contributor. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brad.
Style goes through different iterations, evolutions in clothing. Same thing can happen, of course, with bodies. Tweezed eyebrows go out, full eyebrows come in, are man buns making a comeback? And of course, some of the most impactful and sometimes unsettling pressures can come in the form of body shape itself. For years, lots of top models had one thing in common. They were super skinny. Lots of women across the country followed suit. Well, now, lots of celebrities seem to have something else in common.
That's why when I said pink wig, thick, it was, oh, that's a iconic Nicki Minaj line, because that's what she wears.
And over the last several years, an entire industry has sprung up around creating a certain body shape. There's regulation around that industry, and like many regulated industries, this one has given rise to a black market economy. Let's go to Ode Swache. She's a producer with Impact by Nightline, which is now airing these really fascinating, in-depth shows exclusively on Hulu. And Ode, it can sound bizarre when you first hear it, like a black market for butts, and yet you discovered some really alarming things.
Yeah, you know, there seems to be this cultural fixation around the world, and has really caught up so that now it's exactly what you're describing. It's models, it's people, like, you know, celebrities. It's in music, it's in fashion, it's all over social media.
All right, y'all, BBL update. I am officially 2 months post-op.
Yes, I have a BBL, a lipo 360 and arm lipo. I got it in Miami.
That's the Brazilian butt lift, but not everyone is qualified to get one. And by that, I mean you need to have the means to pay for the surgery.
My BBL and my breast implants were $7,500.
But you also need to have the extra fat on your body.
I didn't have enough fat for my hips, so I did get taken out of the back of my thighs for an extra $1,000.
The FDA says that you're not supposed to inject anything into your body unless it's your own fat. And there are a lot of people out there, because it's not just women, it's also men who get this. There are a lot of people who can't afford it financially or with the extra fat. So it's led to this business of illegal butt injections.
I was desperate to have a bigger, and then almost every girl was going to this lady that was getting the shots in Queens, and it's like, well, give me her number and hook me up.
It's not a hospital or a clinic. It'll usually be like a med spa or a private home or a hotel room, and there will be an injector, and sometimes it's an injecting team, who will take a product and inject it into one's bottom.
This is silicone that I removed from a previous patient. If this was medical grade silicone, which it is not, I'd venture to say this is probably $500,000.
The environment is not sterile. A lot of times people do not know what they're being injected with. And the worst problem that it can lead to is that somebody can, on the table, can actually die because the injector nicks a vein. Or it could be that down the line, it could be a few days later or weeks or months or up to 30 years later, that complications will stem from the product that's been injected.
Yeah, how does that usually play out?
You know, this is something that people talk about and feel comfortable talking about, but don't necessarily feel comfortable going on the record about. And one of the women who we met, Taryn Quinteri from Phoenix, Arizona, came forward and really shared like her journey with us, putting a face to this issue.
I never had anything extra, and I really, really, really always wanted a little
cushion for the pushin.
She's this white woman who has always been skinny her whole life, so she didn't qualify for a BBL and had to turn, in her mind, had to turn to these injections.
I heard about these injections from some friends of mine. I knew other people who had had them, and they had no issues. They absolutely loved them.
And in 2017, she went and got injections in Vegas, where she met her injectors at a hotel. And in fact, these injectors were so popular that when she got there, there was a line of women around the corner waiting for their turn.
I talked to them, and she had done her own daughter, so I thought, you know, I completely trusted her. And I was also told that it was a form of injection that would dissolve in a few years. And I researched the product that she said it was, and it all seemed fine.
She was really pleased with the results that, you know, for the first 6 months, and then she started to have problems.
I knew it was the injections, and I knew something was wrong.
It started off with a rash that would not go away. She saw a whole bunch of specialists.
One of the people that specialize in silicone injection removals in the United States, he told me it was worse than cancer because it was so deep into my muscle. So you can't just remove your entire muscle. Like, you need a muscle. And there's also a ton of nerves in your muscle. So in order to get all of these out, they would have to, like, take my muscle out, dissect it, try to get everything out, piece it back together. I mean, it's just impossible.
She was advised to get the product removed, and she decided to go to Colombia to get her product removed.
Why Colombia?
She says that the surgeons in Colombia do a better job, in her estimation, of removing as much product as possible, yet keeping a rounder, plumper silhouette.
What?
And she tells us...
I thought you were about to say, oh, she went because she, like, the doctors in Colombia had more experience to do this safely, and some of the doctors here, like, she didn't trust safety. Why? You're saying, like, she was still thinking about aesthetics here.
She is still thinking about that, yeah.
Because I'm young and vain, and I want to live pretty. So the doctors in America, that, you know, they focus on really just getting as much product out of you as possible for your health. But I'm choosing my looks up over my health, I guess.
And the little, like, beads that you see?
Yes. The product is all these white sums. All of this is the product.
Her surgery was really successful. They got a lot of the product out, more than they expected to in a first round. However, she does need to have a second round because one of the other problems is that the product migrates. And so she needs to have more surgery to get that removed.
So if this is illegal, are there legal consequences to the people running these things? Like, are there raids of butt injection sites, or does this not rise to the level of concern with local PDs? Because it can sound silly almost, except it sounds like there are lots of women whose health is being compromised here.
That is such a good question. And yes, the police is trying to crack down on this.
This is the victim after the procedure, with the scarring up there.
We embedded with the LAPD as they investigated the case of a mother-daughter injecting team that they say caused the death of a woman who had seen them for another round of injections.
According to our coroners, the product was injected into the bloodstream. Once that product, that silicone oil-based product, hits the bloodstream, it creates what they call, what the coroners identified as microembolisms. And once those microembolisms hit the bloodstream, the heart starts pounding, the vascular system constricts, and they multiply, and it was explained to me similar to shaking up a can of soda.
As a result of this death, they were able to charge this mother-daughter duo with murder. They've pled not guilty and are currently out on bail.
The bail was substantial. It was $2 million a person, and that's the standard bail for murder. And in my 26 years, I've never had a murder suspect bail out that soon without a bail reduction.
And now the investigation continues as they look to see if there are even more victims who are out there.
Well, and so when you've spoken to these women, I mean, because I think the basic question that comes up here is, like, why? Why has this become so worth it? Why is this worth defining a big chunk of your life over?
There doesn't seem to be one kind of stereotype as to who's interested in getting a procedure like this. It seems to be people from all different kinds of backgrounds who aspire to this because they want to look better. And even when people try to undo the injections, the doctors, the plastic surgeons will say it's impossible for them to remove 100% of the product.
Living every day knowing that this product is still deep in my muscle is like living with a ticking time bomb.
So Taryn got her surgery a little over a year ago, and her recovery, she says, has been amazing. But, you know, she's making a decision to possibly not have children because of this product inside of her, because she may not live long enough to be able to take care of her children until they're adults.
I had to tell my mom that, you know, I might not be around to take care of her when she's older. I'm an only child, so I'm all she's got. And hopefully they come out with something, you know, and figure out a way to remove it from the muscle. And I try to stay hopeful of that, but I also have to like live every day like it's my last and just really, you know, make the best out of life right now.
But she's doing this to help other people out there to get the message out. Think twice about doing this. It may not be worth it.
Okay, that is Ode Swache from Impact by Nightline. You can catch the full episode on Hulu. New episodes drop on Thursdays. Thanks so much, Ode.
Thank you.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, all the news that's fit to picket. One last thing is next.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. It's uncomfortable to cross a picket line. That's the whole point. But yesterday, when a picket line formed outside one of the world's most venerable newspapers,
it serves to show that in our strength, there is will.
What was happening on the sidewalk wasn't the point at all. You might have heard about this. The New York Times has a largely unionized staff, and yesterday those staffers went on a 24-hour strike. The company had to rely on non-union staffers and lots of foreign reporters to put out this morning's paper. But in their appeals to readers, these union workers were not just talking about the newspaper. Of the Times' 9 million subscribers, 8 million of those are digital only. There's no ink on their fingers, only a keyboard. So what emerged here was a distinctly 21st century labor conundrum. How do you create a digital picket line?
Do not do today's Wordle. Do not listen to The Daily. Do not reference a New York Times recipe.
Writers began asking supporters to not only boycott the Times website, but to avoid even clicking on that Twitter link with a Times article. Don't click on the first Google result you see if that result is NYT.
Usually I would use my New York Times subscription. I have a subscription, but I'm foregoing that.
Not only that, but the Times gets a ton of revenue from non-news ventures. Workers said if you really want to support them, use a cookbook instead of the Times cooking site that day. And perhaps the biggest ask of all, break your Wordle streak.
And I've got a five-letter word for you. Union. Thanks for your support today if you're not playing.
This is a key part of how labor and management discuss modern negotiations, by the way. When a huge corporation has several revenue streams, should a big investment in online games affect the news staff? The union says the Times is hogging huge profits for shareholders. The paper says it's being more than fair. Unlike a lot of companies, it still has a pension program. What happens next could all depend on how successful yesterday's firewall became. Start Here is produced by Kelly Therese, Jen Newman, Brenda Salinas Baker, Madeline Wood, Vika Aronson, Iru Ekpenobi, Cameron Chertavian, and Tara Gimbel. Ariel Chester is our social media producer. Josh Cohan is director of podcast programming. I'm our managing editor. Liz Alessi is the head of ABC Audio. Thanks to Lakia Brown, John Newman, and our intern, Nania McLean. Special thanks this week to Chris Berry, Candace Smith, Mike Dubusky, Chris Al, Andrew Evans, Jonah Haskell, Kevin Ryder, Tracy Wolf, Stephanie Ebbs, and India Brewer. I'm Brad Milkey. See you next week.